This is Four Snippets Up, a collection of short and cheerful Due South fanfiction written and read by Kirawa. Feedback to kirawa@yahoo.com. The first snippet is The Thrill of the Hunt, Diefenbaker's Introduction to Chicago. Dief and Pack Ben had traveled many places in pursuit of their rightful two-legged prey, but this was the worst. In Chicago, the humans had gone mad. They covered every inch of earth with concrete, as if their cars needed the room more than their own young. They covered their bodies with false scents, trying to hide the fact that they were still animals. They lived piled together in tiny spaces that would have had rats snapping at each other. A new scent yanked Dief's nose to the side. It was sweet as honey and as rich as weak dead caribou. Dief wanted to lie down and wallow in it. He wanted to sink his teeth in its rough and mount it. He wanted to devour it. Dief ghosted through the building, crowded with law hunters and lawless prey. Silent and unseen, he tracked the scent to its source. Up these stairs, down that hall, through a door, across the room. There. Dief bellied up to his target. A man sat at the desk, guarding his food. Dief waited. 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 The man turned away. Dief launched himself with the speed and accuracy of a tendon slash, snatching his prize and retreating to the dark space under a nearby empty desk. The man yowled loud enough to penetrate Dief's ears, tinny and distant.
Goddamn dog stole my Krispy Kreme!
Crispy. Creamy. It tasted even better than the scent had promised. Dief was licking his chops, eyes half closed with pleasure, when the man's head appeared at the entrance to his den. Dief showed his teeth and gave him a friendly piece of advice. In contested territory, the slow go hungry. The second snippet is Burning Down the Locker Room, a missing scene from Burning Down the House, starring Fraser. I paused on my way out of the locker room, struck by the sight of a pile of clothes on the floor in front of Ray's locker. It, more than fingerprints, dental cast, and nose measurements, proved conclusively that this man was not Ray Vecchio. Ray was always meticulous in caring for his apparel. I felt moved to correct the mess. The sodden suit jacket I picked up and straightened out with a quick flick of the wrists, releasing the acrid scent of smoke into the room. I laid the jacket out neatly on the bench. His pants were next, heavy black denim. I knew from experience just how uncomfortable wet jeans were. However, Miss Ray's complaints on the way back to the station house had focused more on the indignity of riding in the back of a squad car than on his car, clothing, or personal discomfort. I folded the pants and placed them next to the jacket. Underneath were Ray's shirts. I found myself brushing at a rough spot on the turtleneck, the bullet hole. I quickly folded the shirt around the blemish, banishing it to an inner crease, and picked up Ray's undershirt, examining it closely under the light. It was unmarked, although I suspected that Ray might well carry a bruise on his skin. The t-shirt smelled of smoke and lake water, but it also carried Ray's own scent. I sniffed under the arm of the t-shirt, in the interest of a full comparison. This man smelled nothing like Ray Vecchio. Ray had worn brute deodorant. This shirt had a much more subtle musk, overlaying honest sweat. I hungrily breathed in the essence of the man who had saved my life. Oh dear. I dropped the t-shirt on top of his undergarments and fled the locker room. The next snippet is The Return of Nautilus, a follow-up to the episode Spy vs. Spy. Got it, Ray yelled, pulling out a note hidden inside a Bose speaker in the ritzy Gold Coast apartment they'd just ransacked. Can you read this thing? Fraser scanned the text. Come on, come on! We've been on Nautilus's trail all week, and Pike said she'll be catching a flight out of the country tonight. I think... Yes. Fraser raced into the bedroom, almost tripping over a silver-haired Persian, and held the note up in the mirror. "It's Cyrillic, written in a relatively simple code, a form of mirror writing with some aspects of Pig Latin. So what's it say?" "When the buyers are ready, they should send a parcel by bike messenger to 310 West 38th Street." "Right, I'm on it," said Ray, pulling out his cell phone. "And the parcel must include both this note and a cat." Both men turned as one to look at the feline eyeing them disdainfully from under the bed. 10 minutes later. "I swear, Fraser, the lady has lost it. Sure, she may be a super spy, but she's old, you know? First they get to smelling funny, then their brains start to go bad, like milk that's been in the fridge too long. Do not even try to awe me here, because this is just twisted. Sticking a cat in a box is cruel. Ray? Plus," Ray dabbed at the deep scratches covering his hands and arms, "not so easy to do. Ray, I believe I mistranslated. The note actually requires the parcel to contain this note and a kettle, kotel, rather than a cat, kotek." Ray turned and stared for a moment, then walked out of the apartment. "Ray?" Silence. "Nautilus really does have the most appalling handwriting," Fraser apologized to the snarling, quivering cardboard box on the floor. The final snippet of this collection is The Case of the Missing Stetson. Fraser slammed his closet door open. "Give it back," he snarled. Sergeant Bob Fraser jumped, his gaze darting desperately around his cabin before he settled his arms across his chest. "Give what back?" he hedged. Fraser pointed at Bob's head. "My hat." Bob took off the hat and cradled it defensively in his arms. "Now, son, we settled this months ago. I couldn't very well spend my afterlife in a Stetson with half the brim hacked off, now could I?" "Not that hat," seethed Fraser. "My new hat, the one that just went missing today." "What makes you think I took it?" "Well, I've looked everywhere else, which, frankly, didn't take very long. Given your history of hat larceny, you were the obvious suspect." "Ah," Bob muttered, sweating. "What about motive? After all, I," he gestured with the Stetson and then hid it behind his back, "already have a hat." "You know perfectly well that according to Regulation 64-2, every member of the RCMP is required to have a spare Stetson in their kit." "Well, there you go," said Bob brightly. "You can just use your spare hat until the other one turns up." "There is a matter of principle at stake," Fraser ground out. He stood straight and tall, hands behind his back. "The right to property, as enshrined in—" Bob rubbed the back of his neck. Benton had learned parade rest before he was 7, and even at that age, it had been a bad sign. Little did Fraser know, he was looking in the wrong closet. At this very moment, his Stetson was across town, wrapped in a sheet, hidden under a parka, in the bottom of Ray's closet. Ray smiled lazily, licked his index finger, and used it to draw a check mark in the air. Step 1, complete. This has been 4 Snippets Up, a collection of short and cheery Due South fanfiction written and read by Kirawa. More of my work is archived at kirawa.livejournal.com.